From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
You're listening to Money Talk for Friday, March 27th, 2020. On today's show, we've got Kyle Tedding, and with a look back at the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Jason. Pretty good rebound week. NASDAQ up 9.1% this week, adding 623 points. Closed today at 7502, down 16.2% year-to-date. S&P 500 came back 10.3%, quite the rebound, up 237 points. Closed today at 2541. Broader markets, S&P still down 21% year-to-date. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 12.8% this week, tacking on 2,448 points. We close at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 21,622. Year-to-date, the Dow is still down 23.7%. Kyle, let's just start with the rebound. You look at Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Pretty good bounce back for the market. We came off the lows that we saw on Monday of 18,500 for the Dow, and it was pretty impressive to see, you know, the Dow coming back 3,000 points from the lows that we saw on Monday.
Yeah, and to put it in percentage terms, the Dow's up 21.3% in 3 days off the lows. You know, they're talking about this being the shortest bear market in history. I think it's a little early to say that the bear is over, but at least from a technical perspective, we can say that for the Dow. And, you know, I think the challenge is that the Dow's just 30 stocks. It's 30 industrial stocks, so not really a good representation of what the economy more broadly faces. And I think what we're seeing right now is that industrials are going to hold up a little bit better for a while. That the impact of social distancing is going to have a far bigger impact on these more consumer-focused, more service-focused businesses. And so not surprising to see a bit of a rally here, but I think we need to be careful that, you know, it's really not the sign that everything's over. It's simply a sign that things are looking a little bit better right now.
Kyle, as you know, aggressive investors will sometimes put a wager on stock prices going down. They borrow stock, they sell it short. When you reverse that process, you have to cover your shorts or buy the underlying security to close out your position. And so a lot of the technicians have been saying that the short covering that's been going on this week counted a lot of for the bounce that we saw in the markets.
Yeah, Bob, you know, we don't often look at these technical issues because I think more long-term focused investors care about fundamentals, but this is absolutely a market where technicals matter, where those kinds of things are going to cause problems. And it leads to the types of issues like we're seeing where you've got short covering, you've got what, you know, many experts call a bull market trap, where you can, you know, see the beginnings of a new bull market that never quite materializes, and then we go on to retest some lows. And so, I mean, I think there's a lot of technical factors at play, a lot of reasons to think that, you know, they're going to continue to be at play for a while here in the absence of any real clear direction on fundamentals. And so, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It's a lot of short covering right now that's caused this rally, but, you know, also the fact that we got a stimulus bill passed, also the fact that, you know, we've tested some lows now. And so a lot of stuff going on for sure.
Kyle, when you look at market bottoms, it's notoriously challenging, almost impossible to pinpoint them. And one of the primary reasons, of course, is that the market will eventually form a support level, the point at which stocks generally hold up. But then the traders will retest those support levels, and that generally plays out over a period of months, not hours or days. So I think it's important for people to think of a market bottom more as a string of W's. It doesn't look like a V where you get a quick bounce back, or even a U where you drag bottom a little bit and then head back up. It takes a while to form. You and I read an awful lot of research reports I think a common theme here seems to be that until the headcounts of infected people start coming down, we're just not going to get a sense of the underlying damage. We know that the economic news that's going to be coming out here the next 2-3 months is going to be terrible. We saw that with first-time claims for unemployment insurance, way over 3 million. That was a big number. We saw it in consumer sentiment, fourth largest drop in their 41-year history of compiling the data. We know tentatively that next month, drop in sentiment is going to be the largest ever recorded. We know also that GDP for the second quarter is going to be just terrible. We talked last week on the podcast about Goldman Sachs had raised their estimate to 25%. Now it's almost 40% decline in GDP. You know, we're off the charts in the record books for that. So I think until people had a better chance to digest some of this news that's coming out, maybe we've hit bottom. Maybe we're going to drag bottom for a while. Maybe we'll even see a relief rally. But I think we've got to get some of that bad news out of the way for consumers to feel that, you know, there's just a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I think that's such a good point, Bob. And, you know, you look at what it would take for consumers to turn around and spend it. You know, part of it is that they have to be able to get back out of their homes to do that. But I think investors also need to remember that calling the bottom isn't necessary to be successful. That, if you had a balanced portfolio and you maintained that balance, you don't have to try to figure out what's the right time to sell, what's the right time to buy. You can kind of lean into opportunity, lean away from risk, which we've done. But more importantly, you don't have to be right all the time. You just have to be, correct in the general direction. And so it isn't about trying to say this is the exact bottom. It's about trying to say, are there better deals now than there were yesterday or the day before? I think the answer is yes. It's still difficult to figure out where those deals are when you're not sure what earnings look like. You're not sure where the economic growth numbers are going to come in. But again, I think long before that data starts to improve, we could see signs that things get a little better for stocks.
Kyle, let's talk about the bond market here for a little bit. Credit spreads remain very wide. It's unusual. If you look at the movement of the 10-year treasury since the beginning of the year, we started the year with the yield almost at 1.8. It plunged to below 0.4. For a short period of time. We closed today with the 10-year at 0.73. You know, it seems to me that the yield on the 10-year is going to have to level off here before credit conditions start heading back to some semblance of normalcy.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Bob. And we talked about kind of the technical issues with stocks. I think bonds are also facing some very technical issues. I had a chance to dial into a couple of conference calls this week with a number of bond managers that we use, and one in particular out of Columbus, Ohio, that talked about the fact that when you look at credit markets and when you're trying to sell a bond right now, if your bond's not trading at double-digit yields, it's not trading. No one's out there buying it because they're just finding distressed sellers that are willing to sell at any price. And they're taking down those bonds rather than the bonds that are priced fairly. And so what you get is the bond market as a whole that has to be repriced to reflect what is selling and not priced based on what things are actually worth right now. And so as long as there's some distress in those markets, as long as there's some signs that, you know, perhaps, there'll still be a better deal out there, I don't think we're going to see those yields come back to normal. At least immediately. The good news is the Fed stepped in. The good news is, you know, there's some signs that things are getting better there.
Kyle, I was encouraged by the relief rally in municipal bonds. The tax-free bonds that we use in many accounts had been under duress the last couple of weeks. So it was kind of encouraging to see them come back this week.
And again, some technical issues there, but let's remember that the Fed has stepped in to provide some support there, and this bill that's passed the Senate and the House now this week is designed to provide some support for communities as well. And so, I think the pressure that some municipalities were under, at least for a little while, has been held off. And I think the question will be, how long does that relief last?
Kyle, I want to just go back to the stimulus package here for a minute. It's being packaged as the CARE Act. of interest for many of our clients is that they suspended required minimum withdrawals from IRA accounts for this year, as you know. Want to put a plug in for our newsletter that gets emailed out later today to many of our clients and listeners. And we'll have a kind of a thumbnail sketch of the CARE Act as it relates to RMDs and other issues for clients that they might find of interest. So for those of you out there that don't need the money for your RMDs, this is a pretty good year to take a pass on that. Of course, you need the income. You'll have to keep going here. But we'll have some detail on that tonight in the newsletter. And, you know, this is just a couple hours old here. So we'll need a little bit more time to digest it and to disseminate the information. But if you want to get a sneak peek, look at the newsletter that comes out tonight for just a thumbnail sketch of the stimulus package. You know, Kyle, a lot of folks have written that if headcounts start coming down in a couple of months, that we may not need yet another CARE Act. The headcounts don't start coming down till late in the summer. Then they'll need to come out with another stimulus. But $2 trillion is a lot of money. And as a percentage of the economy, it's also a big number. You're talking about 10% of what we had of GDP last year the government is handing out to individuals and corporations. I think, you know, therein lies the reason for the bounce this week, to close up thousands of points. Kyle, let's switch subjects here for a minute. I mentioned last week on the podcast that the majority of the calls that are coming to the firm are from clients that want to buy. So I need to congratulate those of you that are interested in buying for your courage, number one, for your optimism, number two, and put in just a reminder that picking bottoms is really hard. They tend not to bottom in a couple of days like we've just seen. I think it's just really important to know that it just could get a little worse before it gets better. That's my sense. Of course, I could be wrong on that, but when you look at the market, I think it's important, number one, to acknowledge that not everybody's going to play the rebound because they have significant pieces in stock in the first place. So I don't think it's critical to be buying in. Number two, if you're going to take some bond money or cash to buy in, please try to divide it into three or four different piles. Maybe do a little nibbling now. Wait a little bit. For risk-averse investors and for clients that just can't take more risk in their account, I don't think it's important at all to buy more stocks at this point. I personally haven't done any buying yet. I think it's a little bit early, but that's just a guess. So I think it's important to be cautious. We don't know the extent of the headcounts. I mentioned last week that the experience in China is somewhat encouraging. It tells us that, if we date their virus, January 23rd, it took almost 9 weeks for their headcounts to plunge. If we date our virus problem as March 9th, that takes us out, give or take, to the middle of May before we're going to see light at the end of the tunnel and headcounts come down in a meaningful way.
You know, I think as you look at kind of that question of, you know, where do we go from here? Is it time to put cash to work? Should, you know, we think about, do we sell because it's going to get worse from here? And I think the reality is investors have to think about their risk budget. They have to think about the risk they're willing to take in their accounts first and foremost and forget all the other pieces as kind of the jumping off point to that conversation. It doesn't matter if there's all kinds of gains to be had if it means that you take a level of risk that you're not comfortable taking. And so a part of that, as you say, I think is to the extent you've got cash you want to put to work, take a couple of steps. Don't do it all at once. But the other part of that is make sure that you don't put more cash to work than what you're comfortable, you know, committing long term. And so if it means that, you didn't have the dry powder to put a little more to work now, there's nothing wrong with the allocation you had. It was probably right to begin with. And if it wasn't, it's never too late to get the correct allocation.
Kyle, as you know, I bring up on a regular basis the whole concept of asset allocation, meaning that if you have a standard 60% of stocks, 40% in bonds, and you're in retirement taking the suggested 4% withdrawal, by definition, you have 10 years of your withdrawals sitting in bonds where you're assured of the payments. And, you know, assuming you've got quality bonds, which is mostly what we buy. So I think when you look at reallocating to stocks, then, you know, what it is you're asking yourself is, am I okay with just 7 or 8 years of assurances of my income? And that gets to be pretty personal and pretty subjective. Kyle, I want to switch gears here for the time that we've got left on the podcast and look forward a little bit. You know, we know eventually that the virus will mutate and become potentially something less lethal. We also know that those of us that survive this become immune to the virus. So I think it's possible to look forward, whether it's this fall or perhaps at some later date, to when the virus is mostly a thing of the past and we're getting back to business as normal. I think normal is going to be a little bit different moving forward. Just a couple of observations. Number one, I think it's going to put an enormous amount of pressure on real estate investment trusts that own shopping malls. You know, they were already struggling. I think it's clear to acknowledge that you'll see an acceleration of e-commerce, just a whole lot of people staying home and forced to shop online. And I think for a lot of people, they're going to realize, wow, this is pretty easy to do. And, you know, a couple of days later, they show up on your doorstep with what you ordered. I think a lot of people that have to travel for business are going to find out that, gee, I really don't need to be on the road 40 days a year calling on my suppliers and my customers if I can do it the old-fashioned way, just picking up the telephone or going online or joining Zoom or FaceTime or whatever technology you want to embrace. So I think business travel, which is very profitable for the airlines and the hotel industry and restaurants, it's not going to go away, of course, but I think it's appropriate to suggest that their rebound is going to be a little slower. Student housing would be another. The more and more colleges and universities are going to figure out, gee, we may be able to deliver a quality education for less money if we can get a lot of these kids online where we don't have to house them and feed them and provide physical space. Now, there'll be some in between there, I'm sure. So, you know, the rebound won't be even across the board. We've got a whole lot of oil and gas we got to deal with. That'll take a while to work out. But in closing, I think it's so important to engage in what's called creative visualization. And, you know, it's important to pay attention to what's going on hour to hour, day to day here. But allow yourself the luxury, if you will, of thinking a year from now, or even 2 years from now, when the virus more than likely will have subsided, when most of us get back to what we normally do day to day, and life will go on. So I'm fairly optimistic. You've got a year or two short term. I think we got to be careful because I don't think the bottom's occurred yet. And I think it's important that, you know, for clients that need to engage us to, you know, reach out and we'll do the best we can to talk to you. We're still open for business. Governor shut non-essential businesses down. We're classified, of course, as an essential business. So we still have physical presence downtown. Many of us are, yes, working from home. But we have the ability, the technology to work fairly effectively. Kyle, any closing thoughts on your end?
You know, I think what we have realized ourselves is that the productivity gains that we've lacked for years, we may be seeing a catalyst for a reinvigoration of productivity. And I think you hit the nail on the head. But it's even within our own business. We've realized now that I think some of these client interactions that historically required quite a bit of travel to get in the office, you know, yeah, okay, every once in a while, maybe we can do a Zoom meeting, maybe we can do a phone call, whatever it takes. Because often I think the information is more important than simply the act of getting together. Yeah, there's something to be said for getting together, for saying hello, for being able to interact face to face. But every once in a while, you know, I think these kinds of meetings can be done over the phone. And then you look at what the cascading impact is on other businesses. You mentioned the airline industry, and you know, if all of this business travel that took place, if we even took a small haircut from that, that's a big deal for the airlines, but it's also a pretty big productivity increase for a lot of those salespeople that were flying around the country, spending a ton of time on airplanes in between sales meetings. Speaking as somebody whose father did that for the better part of 30 years for a tool manufacturer here in the state, I can tell you there's a lot of wasted time in airports. There's a lot of wasted time on airplanes. And yeah, you can get some stuff done while you're on them. But I think at the same time, you know, these people probably be better purposed in other places. And so, you know, I think an interesting catalyst potentially for some pretty big productivity gains as we go ahead.
Boy, that's just what this economy needs. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.